Robin Hood Radio welcomes you to David Freeman's Science Insider with your host, the senior science editor of the Huffington Post, David Freeman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Science Insider. You know, we've had a lot of great scientists on the show in recent months, but today we have someone who is not a scientist, and yet someone who's done as much, probably as most other scientists, to promote an interest in science and in space and space flight, space exploration, than any other scientist. And I know he helped spark my own interest in science back in the 1970s when I was a kid and watching reruns of his show, Star Trek. So, of course, I'm talking about William Shatner, or I was going to try to call him, not to call him Captain James Kirk. So, Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, Bill sounds like a good start. David?
Okay. So, thanks so much for being on the show. And I know that you've answered a million questions before about Star Trek. I also know that you're a big on Twitter and that you have now just crossed 1.8 million Twitter followers. So I hope you'll indulge me with a few questions that were sent to me by my Twitter followers about Star Trek.
Of course.
So it's been, Star Trek ran for only three seasons, the original series back in the late 60s. What would be different today if Star Trek were to be launched today?
Well, I think without a doubt the special effects, which were non-existent in those days, they'd photograph the spaceship on a green screen, which was a technology that was becoming available, and very little computer animation. And now, of course, anything you can think of can be done, and done efficiently. I mean, you're almost drawing it with a pen rather than doing other technical things to get the images. So the science fiction aspect of it, the look of it, would be different.
Right. Are there any particular discoveries you think of? And we have not discovered alien life yet, so I don't know.
We have not discovered what?
We haven't discovered alien life yet, so I guess it would still all be...
We've discovered alien life. It's out there.
Why do you say that?
Well, it depends how you define alien life, bacterial. That we haven't got our hands on the smoking gun, but everything we know leads to the acceptance of the fact that there is life out there. Life on Earth is so urgent and so burgeoning and so immediate. Vines that climb to the sky, killing everything else. I looked at some bushes I planted 3-4 months ago, and they're 2 feet higher now. The sap is rising in the northern part of the hemisphere because spring is here and things are growing. And if there's such an urgency for life on Earth, can you imagine that not happening elsewhere, and especially now that we're examining Mars with more exactitude, that the microbial life has got to be there in some form or another.
Right, I know. And since you're bringing up the Mars, recent Mars mission, I believe you were among those who were calling out NASA to do a closer look at a weird rock a few months back. Can you tell us about that? What you saw and what you thought about that?
Somebody threw a rock at our machine. And
not quite.
And those on distant planets shouldn't throw rocks.
You saw there was a photograph, I believe, that the Curiosity rover took of a really bizarre looking rock.
And it obviously was thrown up by the tracks or something like that. But it was great fun. But it only dramatizes the speculation of what happened on Mars and what happened on Mars. We know there had been and there is water locked up on the poles and underground in a permafrost. What happened to Mars for the atmosphere to disappear and everything else to disappear and become dead, or so it seems? What happened? The mystery of Mars is overwhelming. It's got to keep scientists up at night. What happened?
Well, let me, before we go on about Mars, because I do want to ask you a bit more about this. I mean, one last question about Star Trek, and then we move on. About do you have a favorite Star Trek moment or a favorite episode?
Do you know that's the first time in all this time I've been asked that question?
Oh, come on! Of course not. No, seriously.
I there were moments in most of those shows that were lovely moments as an actor. As somebody who is a fan of good writing, there were moments of wonderful writing, either philosophical or dramatic or character-wise. There were individual moments that, as an actor, I loved to play. I do a one-man show, which, by the way, is going to be in movie theaters on April 24th. For one night only, April 24th, the one-man show has been made into a movie. And in that one-man show, I use a clip from Star Trek about discussing the word risk and the risk we are taking, we, the Star Trek cast, taking in floating around space. But risk is what we need to, risk is what life is all about. Which, by the way, is a risk. April 24th, enough people will go to the theaters, and enough people will find out about it. So, risk was a great speech written in Star Trek that I thought was well written, and the impulse, the intelligence behind the speech was good. So, Star Trek is larded with those moments.
Well, risk is an interesting thing. I wonder, just do you think we've become too risk averse, either as a nation or a people, or maybe more specifically
in space? We're risk averse because the finances aren't there, and it's a very legitimate question to say if 40 million people in this country go to bed hungry, how can we spend money on going to Mars? And the counter argument to that would be by the industry of going to Mars, we create jobs enough to potentially feed those hungry people at night.
So, do you think that? I mean, do you have specific ideas in mind for the space, for NASA or our space flight?
We must accept the premise, David, that I know nothing. All right, I'm more ignorant than, but. By the same token, nobody knows. I mean, if they sent the rockets to the moon by way of a science fiction writer's theory, then it is obvious that we all don't know very much. And that which we know is suspect because every time we find something new, it challenges what we've known. So... on that premise, you can say anything and be absolutely right or absolutely wrong. Go ahead.
I guess it's easy to make the assumption that, as given your many roles in science fiction, Star Trek, and other science fiction series, that you have a strong interest in science. Do you have a strong interest in science?
Absolutely. It would be like asking my puppy. Why are you nosing around everything that when she's let out, she goes into everything, sniffing everything, tasting the world that she knows around her. And that's what human beings have got to do, taste the world around and taste, look to the skies for the worlds they can't taste, but with that curiosity. So if you approach science and therefore life with the awe and wonder it should have, then you go around sniffing all the mysteries and try and make some sense of them. But awe and wonder is the keynote to human beings' total attitude at all times, I think.
Well, is there a specific scientific or space-related fact that you find most awesome? What awes you most of all about
science? Well, we're looking for the theory of everything. And just philosophically, you've got to know that everything ties up into everything. I mean, everything's tied up. I'm looking out the window, and I'm seeing a car go by, and I'm looking through the glass of the window and the shades and the telephone, and I'm looking at different objects, but you just know that every one of those objects are tied together molecularly or philosophically or both, and that we're all part of whatever the whole and the whole universe is one, and there is the theory of everything. Everything is tied into one definitive fact. What that is a matter of opinion or faith, and science seeks to find out as many answers as possible. The questions are unanswerable. The questions, we don't even know the questions. So we're asking questions about questions we don't even know what to ask about. It's such a bizarre state of mind that if you were to look at it without the pink glasses of habit, you would say it is the weirdest way of living to be asking questions about things you have no idea what they are. Mm-hmm. But we are human, and we've been given that attitude as my puppy sniffs out out of curiosity everything around her world. We are fumbling around trying to discover things about our world. Armed with the knowledge that everybody doesn't know, and that everything is taken on faith, and scientists themselves say all we do is spread rumor, then you leave yourself open to the questions and the potential answers that frequently fly in the face of the answer you had yesterday.
Well, you mentioned faith a couple of times. Do you think that science has all the, or will have someday, the answer to all these deep questions, or
no,
is there something else?
No. Nobody has the answer. Neither faith nor science has the answer. And nobody should pretend to have the answer. Here is the way that I think, and you may like this way, or it may be comforting to you this way, but I don't have the answer. In my opinion, should be the way it's expressed. It's not, I have the answer, and my way is the way, or otherwise I'll kill you.
Is there a specific question you'd like scientists to tackle or to find an answer for?
Well,
I mean,
the your question covers such a mass of information; it's impossible.
Well, is it to find extraterrestrial life? Is that what?
Well,
is that your question, or something else?
If your question is extraterrestrial life, just mathematically, there's got to be, but the distances are so vast that if, and I'm sure we'll one day find that light is not the basic rate of speed, that there are other ways of getting around faster, and man's imagination of warping speed may very well be something that can be done, or that it's all circular and you just cut through the center of the circle. Whatever it is, the questions are awesome and the answers are niggardly.
Right. Well, you said you're very convinced, you're fully convinced that extraterrestrial life exists. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I was talking with someone about this interview and he said, be sure to ask you about an episode in 1969 when you claimed that aliens had saved your life after a motorcycle accident, and then
right.
That you would say that was a joke. So
it was a joke that got out of hand. I to make the story short, I was riding a desert bike and fell, and my bike wouldn't start, and I was alone. The buddies had gone on, hadn't seen me fall. So now I was faced with, I had leathers and a helmet on. Do I take the leathers and the helmet off and die of heat stroke, or keep it on and die of sunstroke, or keep them on and die of heat stroke? And I had to push the bike. I thought, so you know, weirdly, maybe it was the knock on the head that somebody's going to steal the bike, so I needed to push the bike. And anyway, I did, There was a figure in the distance that I thought I saw that waved me on, and I finally found a road, which I coasted along, and got my bike fixed. Mm. And so I made that figure like an extraterrestrial figure. Well, that got out of hand, and I just went along with the joke for a long while.
So people reported to you that you had seen the CT and that
right.
They made fun of you. And you must have enjoyed that.
I sort of had a laugh, yeah.
Uh-huh. But have you had any other experiences that were real or you saw something that you really couldn't explain?
No, but I used to go out into the desert at night. I got caught up in riding motorbikes in the desert years ago, and I'd go out there looking, especially in the Palmdale area where there was a lot of reports of activity. I'd go out there riding the motorcycle at sunset and wait until dark, seeing if, I mean, who else, where, why would you visit a guy with very little education in the Florida swamps when you could come visit me in a nice clean desert, mm-hmm. I thought. And nobody ever came.
But they visited
the guy in the Florida swamps.
Well, yeah, there are always people, and the people who are saying they've been abducted, they've been taken away, and I guess
That abduction story had a real twist with that, what's the name of the scientist who said that he now believed in the abduction stories all had a same theme. I'm trying to think of the guy's name.
Well, I can't remember his name, but someone at Harvard, I believe.
Yes, a professor who lost his tenure. Mm-hmm. He was kicked out of everything because he wrote a book saying, I now believe.
And what do you think about that? Do you take these claims?
I would love to. I'm going to find out more about him because I just came across that fact recently. I'm going to find out more about him. But what a wonderful story that is! A scientist who learns to sees the similar lines in these stories of people who never could have connected.
Right. Well, that brings up another point about space flight. I know you're interested in Mars, and I know you must know about the Mars One proposal and other proposals to take human colonists to Mars.
Yep.
I wonder, would you be interested in becoming a Mars colonist?
I wrote two novels about Martian colonists who were sent up there by industry, and like movies, they had the back end, so they weren't paid much up front, but they were going to get the results of all the profit.
Right.
And the company never showed a profit. So the kids of the early settlers rebel. And that was my story.
Well, and I guess that's, by the way, Mars One is supposed to work too. There's TV tie-ins and so on to try to find ways to fund it. But if it does get off the ground, does that interest you to leave the planet, to go on a one-way trip? Or?
No, I don't want to go, but neither do I want to go up in space without a guarantee that I'm coming back. Chris Hadfield is the Canadian astronaut, and I had occasion to talk to him when he passed over Los Angeles, and I spoke to him for about 10 minutes about what he was seeing and what he felt. I believe I'm going to see him later on in the summer, but it was illuminating. That small moment was illuminating. I was in the Mojave Desert when the X Prize was won when they sent up the airplane with the rocket, and then they went to 100,000 feet, I believe, and came back on the Mojave Desert. I watched that flight at from 4 o'clock in the morning on.
Well, surely I'm guessing you've been approached to participate in some of these space tourism ventures.
Right. One of them was the Vomit Comet, and they said, "How would you like to go in the Vomit Comet?" And just the name turned me off.
You've never even been in that? I would assume, figure you would have been on that already.
I could have been, but if somebody says, would you like to be on the Vomit Comet as against, how would you like to be in an airplane with an outside loop, I turned it down.
What about some other space tourism ventures like Virgin Galactic and so on?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm. Well, Virgin Galactic asked if I'd like to come, but pay them.
Mm.
And I said, no, you got to. It's the other way around.
Mm. Well, yeah, I think it'd be a good PR for them.
Right.
So what are you working on now? I know you have a lot of interest, and you're still involved with Priceline and so on. I think you have a very strong interest in horses too, correct?
I do a charity horse show every year. This year, April 26th, the Hollywood Charity Horse Show. Horseshow.org is the place to go if you want to see what it's about. Certainly $1, $10. Contribution goes to children. Every penny of it goes to children and veterans for therapeutic work with them. This Shatner's World in the theater on April 24th. If you go to shatnersworldcinema.com, you'll find out all about it. It's going to be an exciting night, one night only, one-man show in movie theaters all across the country.
Right. I'd certainly check that out. But talking about horses, and obviously maybe it's a bit of a stretch, but wondering if you have interest in biology, synthetic biology, and other scientific, aspects
cell,
of biology.
The veterinary work in stem cell research is a real interest of mine. I'm pursuing it avidly. The last 15 years, maybe, veterinarians have been doing stem cell work on horses that far in advance of human usage, and there's such positive results in the stem cells, and stem cells of all kinds, by the way, not just the ones that have been in the news, but your own stem cells from animals. There's three protocols, and there's a lot of success in horses. We know that medicine in the future, you talk about science, the medicine of the future, the next, from 10 years on maybe, will be stem cells. Everything will be stem cells. The rejuvenation of human beings will certainly be well on its way in the next 10, 15 years.
Well, if I remember correctly, speaking about rejuvenation, remember that there was a Star Trek episode in which I believe Spock's brain had been uploaded into some sort of computer. Does that ring a bell?
I do hear a bell, but it's my tinnitus.
People are talking, scientists are talking seriously about finding a way to, say, upload our brains to kind of create a form of immortality. What do you make of that, and do you think it's a good idea?
Well, anything's a good idea. Every idea is a good idea to somebody. The more we find out about the brain, the more complex it becomes, and why it's so complex, and how did it evolve from this simple cell organisms to this extraordinary organ, we don't know. And our ability to upload this thing or download it, I guess, seems beyond the reach. And yet, when we know that aphorisms and anything that you can imagine we can do with enough time and money, I would imagine that someday in the future, science being what it is, this kind of local science that you can get your hands on, E equals MC squared, is hands-on, they might be able to do it.
Well, you mentioned a couple things here. One, evolution. I don't know if you followed did you follow the debate between Bill Nye and Ken Ham about evolution last month?
No, I missed that. Tell me about it.
Well, just that there's a, Bill Nye, the science guy, has been
kind of
taking it on.
No, I understand. I know who both of them are. I can't imagine what the debate would be about.
Well, the debate is whether or not there's conclusive evidence that evolution, as envisioned by Charles Darwin, is correct.
But surely that's absurd. That evolution is all around us. And what I don't understand, and maybe you can help me understand, is why that flies in the face of those people who have this deep belief in God. Why it's a wonderful law. If it works, it works. If it doesn't work, it disappears. I mean, it's like the answer to everything, including the workforce. If it works, it stays, and if it doesn't work, it disappears. I mean, what could be simpler and more godlike than that simple rule?
Well, I guess the idea there is that if you take the Bible or some way of reading the Bible literally as fact, that it's hard to make space for the ancient Earth, you know, the Earth being billions of years old. So I think that was the debate.
But I understand that the fundamentalists think the 7 days are 7 days, but most people don't think 7 days are 7 days. That it was a period of time that was meant to symbolize a passage of time.
Right. Well, and one other thing I was going to ask you about too, in terms of evolution, and not a great form of evolution. I guess it's not really technically evolution, but I know that you've spoken out about climate change too. You said everything is it sounds like you're excited, but you're also concerned about climate change.
When I read Rachel Carson 40 years ago, 50 years ago, it resonated with me. I knew that was the truth, and I began to speak about it. And I've done a lot of talking and study about it. And we now know that it's possible that the tipping point has already been reached. And you might as well not talk about it, because your children are going to have a terrible time.
Right. So are you an optimist or a pessimist about the future of the planet?
No, it's terrible. I mean, again, we're looking to science to solve the problems that science caused. Science being industry and the advance of mechanizing the efficiency of man's work. We're in terrible trouble. We're apocalyptic trouble, and nobody is doing anything about it. Or they're sort of fumbling around doing something about it. But like I say, many scientists, and I know several ecologists who believe it's too late.
Well, that's certainly a downer. Do you have any note? We've got about a minute left. Is there anything, a note of optimism you can leave us with, or is it all depressing?
We got to get to Mars fast.
Well, that's people have said that, right? Stephen Hawking and others
Mars
said that we need to be a multi-species,
species. Getting to Mars is no answer. The answer is to double down and try and stop global warming or delay it or move to the North Pole or somewhere other.
Do you have any specific suggestions you'd like to offer to individuals or even to scientists about what we should be doing?
I'm going to end this interview the way I began it. I know nothing.
Ah, okay. Well, on that note, clearly that's not true, but we can end it that way anyway. I know you've got to go, and we're about out of time anyway, but I want to say thank you so much, William Shatner.
Well, it's my pleasure.
It's a real treat.
It's my pleasure. I just hope that people look into Shatner's World, shatnersworldcinema.com, and you'll have a great night on April 24th.
Okay, will do. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Science Insider with David Freeman, the senior science editor of the Huffington Post, produced in cooperation with Robinhood Radio, robinhoodradio.com, on the web.